The podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com. And distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular audio podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, normalaudiostash.com. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. Welcome back to the Audio Stash today. It is Wednesday, October 31st. It is Halloween. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal today to help end marijuana prohibition in America. Just visit normal.org to make your donation or join Normal today. Last night in the Democratic presidential debate here in Philadelphia, the question of marijuana decriminalization was asked, couched in the terms of whether the other candidates agreed with Senator Chris Dodd's opinion that he would decriminalize marijuana in this country. Now, everyone except Dennis Kucinich raised their hand up and said they didn't agree. Kind of surprising from Bill Richardson. We're going to have more about that debate question later this week. Very, very interesting stuff. Here in our Halloween program today, we have a great show for you, a great stash for Halloween here from Normal's Daily Audio Stash. We're going to have our regular weekly segment with Dr. Mitch Earlywine discussing the science of cannabis. We're also going to include Normal's senior policy analyst Paul Armentano into our discussion today. Also in the program, we're going to find out about the real zombies out there, and these are the cannabinoid deficient individuals in our society. It's an interview we conducted last Halloween with Dr. Robert Malamede. He's an endocannabinoid and cannabinoid researcher there at the University of Colorado at Colorado Springs. That interview coming up today. And a great stash of Halloween music here today from groups like The Deformities. All here on your free stash, Normal's Daily Audio Stash today. Oh, and by the way, folks, if you're looking for a great treat to give to your friends, if you're headed out to a Halloween party tonight with your fellow like-minded adult friends, you might want to give out the Normal Freedom Card. It is fat-free. It is sugar-free, but it is full of empowerment and freedom. We have links to download and print out Normal Freedom Cards, a great thing to give to your friends during a Halloween party tonight. Again, links up there at normalaudiostash.com. And don't forget, on Friday, our interview with Sendog of Cypress Hill. It's a wonderful interview. That'll be on Friday's Audio Stash. We'll also get a chance Friday to speak with Danny Danko and Bobby Black at High Times Magazine. A nice preview of what's going to happen at the Cannabis Cup in a few weeks. And in tomorrow's Audio Stash, we'll speak with the associate publisher at High Times, Rick Cusick, about his court appearance in Boston last week with Normal's founder Keith Strupp. They were arrested with a third of a joint at the Boston Freedom Rally and were in court last week. A very cool interview with Rick coming up tomorrow. Let's get into our Halloween stash today. We're going to start with our cannabis science segment. Each Wednesday, we get the chance to talk about the science of cannabis with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Mitch is professor of psychology at the State University of New York. He's author of Understanding Marijuana, A New Look at the Scientific Evidence. He edited Pot Politics, a book that came out this year. He's got a new book, A Parent's Guide to Marijuana, coming out this winter. and he's got a monthly column in High Times magazine. Also joining our discussion today is Normal Senior Policy Analyst Paul Armentano. First, let me give a warm welcome to you both, Paul and Mitch. Now, today we're going to talk about an important medical study that was released this month and reported in the Normal Weekly press release last week. Inhaled cannabis has biphasic effect on capsaicin-induced pain, study says. Now, they used a method to create a very localized pain response here, and this is used widely in medical research, as I understand.
Oh, yeah, this is a standard practice, and in fact, they can do it with a cream where they just put it on a little square at a certain thickness, and it definitely induces a reliable pain across a whole bunch of different kinds of volunteers, and it's used very widely.
Now, Paul, let me ask you, this was localized pain here again, and most people who use cannabis are usually dealing with a chronic type of pain rather than something like a skin irritation.
Yes, this was an experiment that was done looking at a model of experimentally induced acute pain. And as, you know, people who are familiar with the study will know, there was this biphasic effect. You saw medium-grade marijuana patients who inhaled that about 45 minutes later reported a reduction in their perception of pain based on a 0 to 100 analog scale. They rated their pain lower after smoking marijuana than it had been when they had not smoked marijuana. But you found that volunteers in the study who used the higher strength marijuana, they perceived their pain to be greater on these scales. Now, that result actually doesn't surprise me very much. If you go back and you look at the history of clinical trials looking at THC and looking at cannabis on experimentally induced pain, you actually see this result quite a bit. There's three studies that I can think of off the top of my head in the 1970s and early 1980s on the use of marijuana in experimentally induced acute pain that found this exact same result, that subjects complained that they actually perceived a greater sensation of induced pain after smoking marijuana. And you see this in some other types of pain as well. There's a couple studies on post-operative pain. It also appears that the use of marijuana does not appear to treat that type of pain particularly well. Conversely, there are types of pain out there, and specifically I'm thinking of cancer pain, and I'm thinking of a number of neuropathic types of pain, like pain due to spinal cord injury, or MS-associated pain, HIV-associated neuropathy, where inhaled cannabis does seem to be a very significant analgesic. So I think what this tells us is there's a lot we don't know about treating pain in this country, and there's still a lot we have to learn about the analgesic qualities of cannabis. Clearly, this looks to be a substance that, while it may be effective for the treatment of some types of pain, may be less effective for the treatment of other types of pain. And that's not surprising. That's why we have a variety of pain medications available to people right now.
Now, it is true that most folks aren't going to get a cannabis recommendation for medical marijuana for a small cut or burn.
That's true, but this is a good analog in part because it's a controlled pain in the sense that we can say, okay, this is the same across a whole bunch of different individuals, and that way it's easier to do things like compare dosage or compare different medications. Years ago, there was another thing comparable to this where they actually had a really bright, hot light that shined through a hole on your finger. And then when you pulled your finger away, the amount of time you left it under there was another index of pain. And we've seen cannabis increase the amount of time people can leave their finger under that light. And here we're getting a dose-related response from cannabis on this kind of pain as well.
And Mitch, let me ask, were you surprised to see this, as they say, a biphasic effect on pain in this particular study?
I got a big kick out of this, and I was actually delighted to see it. The pain work goes at least all the way back to ancient Rome. Pliny the Elder mentions marijuana as a painkiller in some of his work at around the year 50. So, you know, this isn't news that marijuana helps pain. But I think a lot of folks have suspected that there might be this biphasic effect where a low dose that's too low doesn't have any impact, a medium dose is perfect, and a really high dose may actually be counterproductive, in part because anatomide, the natural THC, the cannabinoid in your body anyway, has a lot of biphasic effects in a lot of different systems. So it sort of makes sense that this would work. And, you know, a number of people over the years have said, yeah, cannabis is super for pain, depending on the pain and depending on the dosage. So we've seen wonderful data showing really superb treatment from cannabis related to HIV-associated neuropathy, the nerve pain associated with HIV problems. And a lot of those clients have basically said that, you know, a little dabble do you, so to speak. There's a certain window where the analgesic effects, the pain-killing effects, are really at their best.
Paul, this story was picked up on by the media. How would you say the coverage has been, and does the media really grasp what's happening in this study, do you think?
The stories aren't very well covered in the media. There's certainly no historical perspective ever given in a story like this in the media. Like I said, if anybody simply wanted to refer to the Institute of Medicine report of 1999, there's a whole section on the use of marijuana in experimentally induced pain models. And they say right then and there that this does not seem to be a good design for measuring or assessing the efficacy of marijuana as an analgesic, because cannabinoids do not seem to, for whatever reason, relieve effectively that type of pain, and in fact, increased perception of pain is often a result of trials that are done using this design. So to have expected a different result in this study when they're using the same design really would have been naive. Like I said, these results did not surprise me whatsoever. What's more important in my mind is that particularly the more recent trials looking at neuropathic pain, and this is a type of pain that generally goes very untreated in this country, in the world, I guess I should say, and is generally not responsive to opiates, that when we look at study designs in assessing the efficacy of cannabinoids to treat that type of pain, and we've seen this time and time again with models of rheumatoid arthritis or models of HIV-associated neuropathy, cannabinoids clearly do have strong analgesic properties. Like I said, I really think it is a matter of identifying which types of pain marijuana treats best. I don't think marijuana will treat all types of pain the same way. This study clearly shows that. But certainly there are very serious types of pain that affect a whole lot of people that cannabis can treat, like cancer pain, like arthritis, like pain associated with diabetes, and that's where the research should be focused on.
Now, Mitch, even though most who get a doctor's recommendation for medical cannabis are dealing with chronic pain or neuropathic pain, maybe other serious conditions, do you think it's worth having studies like this that address a wholly different kind of pain?
No, I like these kind of experimental analogs because I feel like this is the way to counter the arguments that people have about medical marijuana, saying, oh, it doesn't really work, it's in your head, or it's just people who want to get high, there's no laboratory evidence that it really helps pain. This is as good as a lot of the things we see on data from things like codeine and other opiates, and those drugs have much higher addictive potential, a whole lot of negative consequences, and you develop tolerance to the pain and killing effects really rapidly. So here's an opportunity to replace that dangerous drug with a markedly less harmful one and get the same amount of pain relief. Folks who are prescribed opiates are always, you know, eager to find ways to lower their dosage in an effort to just keep their liver and other things healthy, and this would be a wonderful adjunct to that kind of pain treatment as well. And I'm always a fan of relaxation, good stress reduction, making sure, you know, you're not doing other things to irritate anything in order to make sure your pain stays at a minimum with no, you know, physiological intervention at all. And we find that in combination, these are really wonderful ways and to make, you know, the difference between a life that is filled with agony and a life that's really worth living.
Is cannabis, when it comes to treating pain, more individualized in the effects on people than, say, aspirin or other commonly used pain medications?
In part because we've got so much variation by strain. We've got cannabinoids that interact with each other that we don't quite understand, we're not there yet, and we do see a lot of idiographic, a lot of individualized responses, particularly in the pain domain. But pain itself is also an extremely idiographic thing. No two people seem to have the same sorts of pain, particularly when they're, you know, related to some kind of illness. And that's where these experimental analogs, where they induce pain artificially, can be such an asset.
So while we shouldn't be medicating with cannabis for a small cut or burn, in the end, Paul, while this study looked at the localized skin irritation of pain, medical cannabis, especially good quality medical cannabis, is effective for more serious and chronic pain conditions.
It certainly could be. There's also some emerging research that's being done that I find particularly interesting, where investigators are assessing whether there might be a synergistic effect when cannabis is used in combination with other pain relievers. And there's been some studies looking at the combination of marijuana and opiates, and there's other studies looking at a combination of marijuana and non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. In both cases, the preliminary evidence indicates that the combination of the two drugs seems to have better pain-relieving qualities than if either drug was simply administered individually. And I think that's actually quite exciting research as well. It certainly bodes for a day when marijuana may be much more common as an adjunctive pain reliever rather than simply a standalone pain reliever.
Righto. This has been a great discussion. Thanks to you both here today. Paul Armentano is Normal's Senior Policy Analyst. He joins us frequently here on the program. Dr. Mitch Earlywine is Professor of Psychology at the State University of New York. His books are Understanding Marijuana, A New Look at the Scientific Evidence, and Pot Politics. We have links to the books on our website at normalaudiostash.com, and Mitch joins us each Wednesday here on the program.
You're listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash.
Now let's get to a Halloween special interview. We recorded this last year here for our Halloween Audio Stash. This is Dr. Robert Malamede, Professor of Biology at the University of Colorado at Colorado Springs. He's going to tell us about the real zombies out there. Stay tuned after Dr. Bob. We've got great Halloween music here on your Daily Audio Stash. Thanks again for joining us. Let's talk about our cannabinoid system. First, tell us about the term you use, homeostasis. What is it, and do we all achieve it?
Yeah, homeostasis simply means balance. And the way living things work is that we have all sorts of opposing forces that have to be in balance. And the cannabinoids, it turns out, the endocannabinoid system that we all possess is what I call a global regulator of our body's homeostasis, meaning it works in many, many places on many different levels. For example, it'll work within cells, it'll work between cells, and it goes on up and works, you know, between tissues, it controls our hormones. And I now recently have published a paper suggesting that it really involves balance even between organisms. In other words, how people cooperate and interact with one another. So we see this multi-scaled approach to basically balancing energy flow, which is what life is about.
So this is really biology affecting our society.
Well, that's my latest belief, yes. I think that because of how cannabinoids influence our bodies and our minds on so many levels, it's impossible for, since we are all, everybody's connected to their environment and to each other. That's the way life is. And since this is regulating so much of how we think, it's going to influence how we interact and in turn influence things like our society.
This is truly fascinating. Let's talk more about our endogenous cannabinoid system. Does the body produce cannabinoids the same as found in the marijuana plant?
Chemically, the chemical is different, but its ability to interact with cannabinoid receptors is not, you know, is the common denominator there. So we don't make THC per se, but we make other lipid compounds, meaning they're derived from fats, that bind to the THC receptors, as well as having a whole host of other functions. So the endocannabinoid system is a very robust and complicated system that we're really just scratching the surface of. And in doing that, we've found just an amazing wealth of new information and knowledge that's going to have a profound impact on how we develop new drugs and treat people for a whole variety of illnesses.
And in talking about the cannabinoid receptors, Normal's senior policy analyst Paul Armentano and I have been discussing a new drug, Rimonabant, also known as Acomplia, that blocks a cannabinoid receptor.
Well, it specifically blocks the CB1 receptor, which is the main neurological receptor. We have at least two different cannabinoid receptors, one of which is mostly immunological, but not exclusively, and the other, which is much more global, the CB1 receptor. And originally that was found in our brains, but we now know that it really permeates our body. It's literally almost everywhere.
And so these CB1 receptors, they're not just in the brain.
Yeah, for example, they're in your skin, where they have effects on things like skin cancer. They're in your heart, where they help protect against cardiovascular disease. They're around.
What could be some of the effects from blocking these cannabinoid receptors, especially doing it in the long term?
I would think it would be very dangerous, and we have a fairly clear example of what that danger might entail. If you eliminate the CB1 receptor genetically, which you can do by modern biotechnology means, you create what's called a CB1 knockout mouse, and those mice die prematurely. So we need our functional cannabinoid system in order to live our, as healthy a life as we might be able to live.
So, doctor, this sounds like it's all about longevity, one of the current media medical buzzwords. Everyone's looking to live longer and a more healthy life. So let me ask you this. Will smoking cannabis lead to a longer, healthier life?
Well, there have not been explicit studies showing that, so we should be clear on that. What we can do is infer, though, from a variety of means. We know that the cannabinoid system regulates literally everything in your body. And by that, I mean, your cardiovascular system, your nervous system, your immune system, your digestive system, et cetera, your reproductive system. And again, what it's doing is trying to keep those systems in balance. That imbalance means different things for different people. It depends where your starting point is, But what we see in common from all of these cannabinoid activities is that they tend to prevent or minimize the consequences and the development of age-related diseases. And it's these age-related diseases that ultimately are, in fact, aging and associated with illness and death. So the cannabinoids help prevent all of that.
Professor Malamy, there have been a number of recent journal publications pointing to Delta-9 THC and other cannabinoids helping with the treatment and halting the progression of the Alzheimer's disease conditions. One scientist who was involved with these studies even went so far as to say he thought the baby boom generation might have lower rates of Alzheimer's disease diagnosis because they smoked cannabis in the 60s and 70s. Do you think there could be anything to that?
Absolutely. Because, again, who gets Alzheimer's disease? Older people, okay? So this is one of the age-related diseases that I'm talking about. If you look at age-related diseases, what are we really talking about? We're talking about cardiovascular disease. We're talking about immunological disorders like autoimmune diseases such as diabetes, Crohn's disease, arthritis. And then we're looking at cancer itself, as well as the very process of aging. And it seems that they all have an underlying mechanism associated with free radicals, which is also what's at the heart of inflammation. And the cannabinoids, both via the CB1 and the CB2 receptors, have important impacts on those processes to the point that in, for example, recent mouse studies, they've shown that the cannabinoid system is able to reverse arterial sclerosis in mice. We know that it can really delay the onset of experimentally induced things like multiple sclerosis and diabetes. And the fact that it would exert similar kind of protective effects on nervous tissue has also been known for quite a while. The cannabinoid system not only protects nerve cells from dying, but it also is involved in promoting the regeneration and the relinking of nerve cells, part of the learning process. So the manifestations of this cannabinoid system are extremely broad, and the implications are just really starting to unfold. The biggest problem is the inhibition of exploration, both on a personal and a more official scientific level, that's imposed by the absurd government prohibition.
Doctor, it sounds like marijuana prohibition really is keeping America back from treating some of our most serious medical conditions, especially regarding aging.
I would say that for all of these age-related diseases, the first drug of choice that should be tried should be cannabis or cannabis-related medicines, because we are developing synthetics now, which in many cases may turn out to be very advantageous. But the point, nevertheless, is that here we have something that has such a broad, far-ranging impact on the way we work. And, you know, one of the truths associated with life is that we're not just like simple little linear paths, but rather we're like this massive network of interconnected biochemistry. And because the cannabinoid system impacts on so many of those body systems, it's a much more holistic way to try and restore balance, which is essentially health. The illness is really imbalance. So I would say that the first thing you should try for any of these age-related diseases, speaking as a scientist, again, I'm not an MD, but I am acutely aware of all the science. That's all I do day and night is read all of this new science that's coming out on cannabinoids. And that would be the drug of choice for so many illnesses because it's very safe and it manipulates the entire gestalt, so to speak, of the biochemistry rather than targeting some very little narrow corner. And then if that doesn't work, then you try some of the more conventional meds and perhaps use them in combination.
We're speaking with Dr. Robert Malamede from the University of Colorado at Colorado Springs. Professor, it seems like the understanding of the cannabinoid receptors and our endogenous cannabinoid system is going to help us treat humans better medically overall.
Absolutely. Well, you know, being very much involved with the medical marijuana community, I can tell you it has a profound effect on so many people. You know, I teach a course called Endocannabinoids and Medical Marijuana. I taught it since I first moved out here to Colorado to be chairman of the biology department. And, you know, it's so rewarding to see how as you educate people and they start to talk to their family and friends regarding specific conditions, how you can really have a very positive impact. For example, yesterday when I was in my class, one of the students gave a presentation on Parkinson's disease, and she gave that because her father, in fact, had Parkinson's. And after spending a few weeks in the class, she had gone to him and said, "Dad, you should really try this," because he was having a lot of trouble with the meds that he was on and being nauseous and not sleeping and uncomfortable and depressed, et cetera, et cetera. And she basically begged him to try it, which he finally did, and the results have been fantastic. I mean, he's just so much better feeling now than he had been before, and we can understand why that is if you bother to read the science that's out there. It's very clear why this is going to have an impact on so many different aspects of the harm that can be caused by things like Parkinson's, just being one example. But again, in that case, you're dealing with nerve cell death, and cannabinoids protect nerve cells from dying.
We were speaking last week with Mitch Earlywine that science has this negative association with the high of marijuana called the euphoria effect by scientists. Why is this seen as such a bad thing?
Well, let's try and look at what does it mean to be euphoric? What does it mean to feel good? Isn't that what we kind of really try to do? You know, in your normal life, if you're fortunate enough to be a healthy, happy individual with good support structure and families and education and, you know, all of the things that we value in life, you kind of are high, naturally. Well, the cannabinoid system is involved in that process. That's why it has important antidepressive effects. That's why it's involved in making people optimistic. And it's just amazing how it's been demonized. And that's why in a recent article that I published tries to address that kind of paradox. How is it that we have something that seems so good, and yet for so many years we've been told it's so bad? And the conclusion I've come to, and I think it's a very logical conclusion, and has not been really evaluated and tested, but I think it just makes a lot of sense, that we are going to have people in the world who are more euphoric than others. It's just natural. You know, you have an average and you have people above and below the average. And part of that euphoria is going to be attributable to their cannabinoid system, and these people are going to be happy and optimistic, and they're going to look forward to the future. And in contrast, people who are deficient in the cannabinoid system, at least with respect to different areas in the brain, because you could be deficient in one area and not in another, but you're going to have people out there who are going to be uptight and depressive and unable to readjust to new information and learn new things, all of the things that the cannabinoid system controls. So it's my contention that cannabinoid-deficient people, because they tend to look backwards, because the future holds unknowns and they have difficulty learning, relearning, and adjusting, they're going to tend to look backwards. And people who tend to look backwards look at what's already occurred, therefore they tend to agree with one another. I believe, therefore, they get into power and wind up collecting in the government. So I think we're really involved right now in a very critical genetic battle between cannabinoid-deficient people who are making laws against cannabis and people who are out here using it and who are using it to their benefit. You know, the whole stereotype of people, you know, sitting in their cellar and doing nothing, that's not true. It's people, all sorts of successful people at all levels of our society are using it in a constructive, positive manner, including Nobel Prize winners. So, you know, the government is just so off base, and I think they're off base because they can't help it. They're just broken. I call them the primitive people. And I take it a step further. Not only do we enjoy it, it's good for us.
And finally today, Doctor, the big question again, could marijuana smokers, in the end up being more healthy over the long term than those who don't smoke or consume marijuana?
It depends on what they're doing in addition to marijuana smoking. See, it's life, again, is not just like a little single channel that you walk through, you know. It's a very complicated thing. And I would say, and I certainly say this from my own experience, being a marijuana smoker for about 42 years now, a consumer. I don't smoke anymore at all. I either eat or I use a vaporizer, because there's negative effects associated with smoking. No, it doesn't cause lung cancer. That seems to be pretty clear at this point. But it is an irritant. It does probably promote things like emphysema and a variety of other respiratory problems. So smoking, it's not necessarily good for you, and certainly smoking it in conjunction with tobacco probably is not good, and drinking and smoking marijuana together are not good. And, you know, you have to live life and do the right things in life in order to be healthy and alive, assuming that you've been dealt a good hand genetically from the start. But marijuana is one of the contributing positive influences that you can do. For example, in my case, you know, I'm almost 59 years old. Now I have a variety of autoimmune type problems like arthritis, etc. But I run. I go and run regularly, but I smoke before I run. I had GERDs when I had stopped smoking when I first came out here, because I was going to not break the law. This was before I got my permit. I developed GERDs, you know, gastrointestinal reflux disease. There's clear literature that shows why cannabinoids inhibit that. Well, I started smoking again. This was, you know, in 2001. It went away. I've never had the problem again. I've also not really stopped again. So here, you know, we have a huge pharmaceutical industry that's making billions and billions of dollars. We have constantly escalating healthcare costs, and we've ignored something that's very inexpensive and can provide a tremendous amount of relief for thousands and thousands and thousands of Americans and people all around the world. It's ridiculous.
Dr. Malamede, I really appreciate your joining us today here on Normal's Daily Audio Stash, and I can't wait to speak with you again.
My pleasure.
Dr. Robert Malamede is one of the world's top researchers into our endogenous cannabinoid system and the roles and function of our cannabinoid receptors. Dr. Malamede is the former chair of the biology department at the University of Colorado at Colorado Springs, where he currently is a professor of biology and continues his scientific research. Have you ever wondered what Amsterdam is all about? Don't just read about the culture that has accepted cannabis. Experience it firsthand with CS Travel's Sensible Amsterdam Tour with Normal. Travel to one of Europe's most beautiful cities this January for an educational and recreational visit to a city that regulates cannabis like alcohol. CS Travel has arranged an exclusive visit for reform-minded Americans that includes a private tour of some of Amsterdam's most renowned coffee shops, educational seminars with coffee shop proprietors, local law enforcement, members of the Cannabis Retailers Association, and Normal staff. Entertainment includes a special evening at the Boom Chicago Comedy Club, canal tours, visits to the city's many museums, including the world-famous Van Gogh Museum. Don't just wonder about Amsterdam, experience the beauty and freedom of this unique city firsthand with CS Travel and Normal's Sensible Amsterdam Tour. Pricing information is available online at coffeeshoptravel.com. That's coffeeshoptravel.com. Or call toll-free at 800-816-1846. That's 800-816-1846. Be a sensible American. Visit Amsterdam with CS Travel and Normal this January. Call 1-800-816-1846 right now to book your trip. More information is available at normal.org. Now let's get to some great Halloween music I found up at podshow.com. We have links to podshow.com on our website today. Here's The Deformities with Vampire Lover. We have links to The Deformities at normalaudiostash.com.
Kill my baby in a cab. She's the best thing I've ever heard. Sink my teeth into her neck. The blood is good on her.
Deformities. With that track, Vampire Lover, we have links to them at normalaudiostash.com. Found that track at podshow.com. That's also where we found this next one. Here is The Coffin Shakers with Halloween.
Shadows are growing tall. A bad moon's on the rise tonight. The chiller of the night call. Tonight the graves are opening up. The strangest sights are seen. Keep all doors and windows locked this night of Halloween. I sneak into your dreams at night. My voice enthralls your mind. You cannot fight my cold device or the evil that lurks behind. Twilight mist dims your view, it's all like in a dream. Revelations of doom appears this night of Halloween. Souls were unclean. Lives that should have never been. Come to life on Halloween. The shadows are growing tall. A bad moon's on the rise tonight. The chiller of the night call. Tonight the graves are opening up, the strangest sights are seen. Keep all doors and windows locked this night of Halloween.
We are the undead, immortal. No man can harm us unless he pours a stake through our hearts or beheads us. No one is protected from us unless they hold the hated cross. I can savor the most extreme of Satan's delights. I can feed on the blood of a human victim.
Not me.
It is a test. One who is dedicated to the devil and his deeds will not die by a vampire's bite, but will become one of the undead. A vampire. The good and the innocent die.
That was the Coffin Shakers, hailing out of Sweden with that track Halloween. We have links to them up on our website today at normalaudiostash.com. And everyone, have a wonderful and safe Halloween tonight. Make sure you download some Normal Freedom cards for those Halloween parties. They make great treats. They're fat-free and totally healthy, full of empowerment and freedom. That's what everyone wants on Halloween, right? So you can download those for free. We have links on our website at normalaudiostash.com. Everyone, again, have an absolutely awesomely fun and very safe Halloween tonight. To Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 420 tomorrow.